Hey John, good to see you, man. You keep driving, brother. You're good. I think Mr. Ruminos is in the house. Big George, yes, mate. You driving as well? Good man. You keep it on mute, mate. You just keep listening.
I'm away to the gym.
Good man. There we go. Love it. What are we going today? Is it upper body again today, huh?
The upper body needs some help.
Let's build those boobies up, mate. Think Matt's just entered the room as well. Matt's is probably celebrating right now. Chelsea have just won a European Cup, so he's going to be celebrating. Get Paul and Thompson in as well. Got a good bunch of boys in today. Yes, Matt. Matt isn't eating food. He's drinking some beers or drinking some champagne to celebrate, I think. Clarky, good to see you, man. Thompson, good to see you too. Let me just change the screen for me. Oh, man, he's got his top off as well. Mr. Clark's in the house. My boys are in. Thompson, good to see you, man.
Hello, sir.
Paul, nice to see you too, bro. Okay, boys. We're a few minutes in already, so we're going to get underway. And today's topic is obviously my stints always tend to be program design related, maximizing muscle and strength over time and so on. And there's lots of thoughts around, well, I've got lots of thoughts around it, but I try and speak about it from a point of where you're at in something called a continuum, right? So, depending on what you've done previously in terms of your training, what life has thrown at you, what you've got going on currently as well. So that's going to give you a good indication of, how are you going to tolerate certain training programs and what you're going to do around those, right? And there's always something that I look for when training or writing programs. Obviously, one we just discussed, an experience continuum, which I'll go into in a little bit more detail in a second. But the other one is a word that I call a limiter. There's always going to be a limiter that you're going to have when you train. So as you push one area, you can't push all multiple areas all the time. It's impossible. So, for example, if I want to bring up strength on a lift or a body part, I've got to push more on that area, which means I'm going to have to back off on some other things so you can recover from it, right? So, as I'm pushing one thing, I have to back off on something else so your body can handle that amount of stimulus I'm trying to drive the adaptation on. So, those things that we're dropping off on, they might actually become your limiters for the next block that we put into the training program. So the thing that we actually drove up and did well at, we'll put back on maintenance now and we drive something else. There's always going to be this toing and froing of what limiter do we need to pull next, right? So I'll go into a little bit more detail on those as well. But that's just a little bit of framing on two things that I would consider. How we're going to maximize muscle mass as we go on. PJ man, good to see you. How we're going to maximize muscle as we go on through our training life. How we're going to maximize strength, because it's obviously strength and muscle are going to be two great drivers of longevity. But how do we keep those segments moving forward all the time? And we always should be keeping an eye on one, my experience as I go through that training cycle through life, and two, what are the limiters? Okay, so that's a couple of things we're going to unpack today, and I'm going to give you an example of a couple scenarios as well. One recently from actually two from a client. So I'll give you two client scenarios that we looked at with their loads and their reps. So this is why I like you guys putting the loads in, and I typically really go into detail. One, if there's something going on through the week. So some things, if we're not seeing progression on check-ins, I'll go back through all of the data through the week, like very specifically. and go through numbers on total tonnage, where your drop-offs were, things like that. But then I typically go through everything after a 12-week training cycle. Like George will specifically know what I'm talking about, where we set things in 12-week blocks or 16-week blocks, and then we set a new sort of training target around that for the next 90 days on what lifts we're looking to improve, what frequency we're going to hit certain things, how we're going to layer out the 12 weeks, right? So we got to a point now with George that he actually sees benefit in slowly every 2 weeks increasing the intensity. What I mean by that is increasing load on the bar every 2 weeks, and then we back off after 6 weeks, go less load, higher reps again, and then we cycle back down again. So it allows, because his nervous system just needs that little bit more time to coax up to get that intensity up. And that can be a genetic thing. It could be a training experience thing as well, where we slowly have to stimulate his nervous system rather than try and put the foot down on it. And what we've seen before is like the nervous system crash a little bit too hard, and then we got to back off a little bit longer, right? So it's things like that that I would look at after a 12-week block, right? So, and this is very individual. So those things I'll cover a little bit more detail today, but before I do, I'm going to grab one or two of you to give us a couple of highlights of your past 7 days. So Thompson, why don't you give us an update, brother, on one of yours, and then we'll then go to Paul. So Paul, get us a big highlight over the last 7 days for yourself after Thompson, man.
Oh wow, putting me on the
Spot, mate.
spot, mate. Okay, had a slight blowout on social on weekend, but back on it. Back to 6 days of training. Last couple of workouts really focus on form, like good squeeze, good control, good tempo, good everything. And last couple of weeks as well, just getting back to the basics. I mentioned this on the last two calls, I think, where after Marbella last year, learning that in between sets, control the breathing, after exercise, instead of like rushing home, really dialing back, stroll home, like get the parasympathetic system like deep down regulated, et cetera, et cetera. And then also I've been changing my meal timing. So I'm eating just before I finish work, and then I go to have a leg workout, and by the time I go home, I can just have a light shake and go to sleep rather than eating super late and disrupting my sleep. So last 2 weeks have been, this sleep score has been really good.
Top man, top man. And we found a good exercise for you to negate the low back issue. So we're going to build on that. That was a good win for me. Like watching you do that and sending the videos through helped me a lot to just change the same as some movement, but just change the implement that we use. Just makes a big difference, you know. So all the guys that are watching this, make sure you send your videos in still to your guys, okay? Paul, over to you, man. Thanks, Thompson.
I guess for me, I just make Kim and Jayla making progress for a couple of different lifts. Steadily able to increase weights for the pull-pulley split squat, back extension for a little bit. Bench press, I had to pull back a little bit to work with grip, but I'd be able to get increase that in a few weeks. Then his tricep dips got 10 for 10 reps for 2 sets of body weight.
Nice, man. Great progress. So you've got a strength goal at the moment. You're working on some strength stuff.
It's a long-term goal, but yeah.
Good. Any specific lifts you're working on?
Pretty much big three: bench press, squats, and deadlifts.
Nice, man. Good. So yeah, we'll cover. We may even cover some of those little bits. And again, like you'll probably listen to Mr. Fudge, Coach Fudge, on some of the calls. Like there's specific things that we would look at in powerlifting as well. And he's probably gone through the technique drills and so on, and maybe some limiters that are sometimes looked at in terms of those lifts too. But we can delve into some of those because I will touch on limiters today as well. And that might be things like weak links in your chain, right? So some coaches look at some things a little bit differently. I have like a lens that I look at in terms of strength of specific exercise that cover the strength profile of certain muscles. So if I'm looking at the posterior chain, I want to make sure that every part of that strength profile is strengthened up as much as possible, right? So yes, hip glute bridges, things like that. But things like Romanian deadlifts, I wanted a specific percentage of my deadlift and my squat. I want my standing good morning at a specific percentage of my deadlift and my squat. The horizontal back extension, those things will hit. So like the short position would be the horizontal back extension. Romanian deadlift would hit more of the mid-range, and then your standing good morning, seated good morning is going to hit the lengthen range more. So I'm hitting all three components of that strength profile of the posterior chain. So I can keep that as strong as possible to help then improve the squat and the deadlift, you know? So things like that might be a limiter. Is there a specific part of that strength profile that could be a limiter in your strength development, right? So that's what I mean by that. And again, once you really drive one component of strength, again, you can't drive them all. So one thing is going to have to take a bit of a back seat. And then that percentage of strength between the other lifts gets more out of the, out of, not out of whack, but out of ratio, right? So then we have to bring that back up and cycle that back in to strengthen it back up again. So those things may be warranted to take a look at some point. Right. Once, if you're stuck at a lift for sure, that's when I really start to take a look at a few items like that. But in terms of the experience continuum, the few things that I look at first is where are you on that training continuum? Are you a beginner? Are you in like a 0 to 1 year of your training life? Are you in an intermediate phase, or so have you got like a good year to 18 months under your belt of good solid strength training and resistance training with quality form up to about 4 years? After about that, I typically class people as good advanced trainees, and we can really start to go at a deeper level. And that's when, after we get into like the intermediate level, we can really start to look at different methods of programming periodization. Because it essentially, if you've been really good for a good year to 18 months, it sounds like you're in it for the long game, right? So you're not in it for a year and you're out. So after that, you can really start to look at, well, let's look at long-term periodization a little bit more. Let's really look at where we're going to take this thing and get the hands on the wheel and put the foot down on the accelerator, and let's go and do some work, you know? But if you're a beginner, then there's certain things and certain ways that we would want to program to accelerate your progress, right? And we've covered this on many calls, myself, Ben probably as well, a lot of the coaches would be too, but the specific way we might want to look at programming for a beginner might be totally different to what they've previously done coming in, right? So typically when people come in, it's like, I've done these bodybuilding splits, I'm doing chest on this day, I'm doing legs on or quads on another day, I'm doing calves on another day. Where ideally, if you're a beginner, you want to be hitting the same lifts for frequency to acquire skill acquisition as quick as possible. Because the more frequent you hit that lift, the better you're going to get at it. The more you can access those ranges in the lengthened and shortened positions, so you're working those end ranges for strength. That's when you're going to accelerate your progress much faster. The better you get at those lifts, the more you can improve muscular contraction, the better you're going to be. So typically 3 days a week, full body can do that really well, because you can repeat the main compound lifts over and over, or the main lifts that you need to focus on, acquire skill. And then obviously you've got your output stuff as well that will follow alongside that. For a beginner, that's where we would probably want to start, right? Typically standard reps, you could pick, and I could probably make an argument to keep a beginner on 8 reps only, let's say between 5 and 8 reps for the main lifts, and then the output work could be high rep metabolic stuff, and we could program more around that type of stuff. But for the main component of it, for the main lifts we want to improve the skill, I could probably keep you around 5 to 8, 6 to 10 reps for about 6 to 12 months. And all I would program is time in positional strength. So I'm layering in time in those end ranges and short ranges. I'm giving you more range of motion to access on those lifts, on that specific lift. So Chris Clark on this call right now, we were doing front squats, we were doing squats, and we just integrated a barbell hack squat, which is probably the biggest range of motion that your knees are going to travel past your toes in a lift. And the weight will actually go down, but the work that your quads have to do will go up with a lighter weight. So this is where we can really take advantage of you getting really strong at those end ranges. So when you come back to doing your normal front squat or whatever squat pattern you want to do, your tissues have experienced that tolerance that they need to acquire to go back and start lifting heavier loads. They've experienced that tension that they need, right, at those end ranges. So we're sort of, wouldn't say bulletproofing, but we're really making solid the tissue and giving it good tissue tolerance and integrity to take it to those places you need to go to get strong in those ranges. And then bang, we can start to come back, and then we're going to add more load further down the line. So we do it typically in a time distance load format or a time distance load order. And then we can start to sequence towards the end of that more upper lower splits potentially. Right. So now we're going to need to start adding more volume. So initially the beginners will be looking more frequency. We'll probably look at volume across the week rather than in the session, just to allow less muscle damage, less muscle soreness, so you can hit the frequency over and over and over without being too beat up to come and keep skill in a good place for you, right? So remember, Thompson, some of our first workouts where some of the questions I would just ask you every week were, how sore are you? You know, and the feedback you got, my legs were like, you couldn't walk properly. I was like, okay, we got to dial our volume back because we had to do legs once a week. I'm like, well, I want to hit it 3 times a week, so we got to do something here to really scale back the muscle soreness you're having. And it was just low amount of sets, keeping you in a range where you're not going to failure on those set. And eventually, we got a nice frequency for your lower body, and it started building and building, right? So that's why we look at those things, so we can hit the frequency, you know. And then we can start layering in volume. So once you hit that intermediate stage of the experience continuum, thinking about now you can start adding more volume to those muscles, right? What's Clark saying there? Yeah, we're all gunning for George's legs. Bloody hell, he's an absolute monster. He's got my quad goals. Georgia has my quad goals, I'm telling you. Apart from obviously Ben's up there as well, but George's got a decent set of pins on him. But yeah, we started layering more volume there, you know. So after about a year, volume can increase, and then we want to start thinking about increase in intensity and fluctuating those two things. So we've got a way to drive one and then back off, so we can really keep that continuum moving forward over and over and over, right? So are you all familiar with what intensity means when I say intensity? Hands up if you give me a just unmute yourself and give me a shout if you understand intensity. Yeah, so load. So to gain strength, you want load to go up over time on lifts, right? So you want to be adding more load to the bar. But what you'll find is there's always going to be a spot where you just can't keep increasing load linearly. It's impossible, right? So what we tend to see with that is there's always going to be a point where your nervous system is going to like downregulate yourself to a certain point. We just can't keep ramming that super maximal lows all the time. You have to back off at some point, right? So personally, when I like to program in a way where I use an undulating approach. So what I mean by undulating, you might see one phase where the intensity goes up on the bar for 3, maybe 6 weeks or so, depending on how well you're doing. So if you're making progress, I don't want to stop that. And then after that cycle, I might back that intensity down. The load on the bar comes down, so the weight drops a touch, but the volume goes up. And then I'm just doing this over time. But what you notice is over time, even though I'm backing off on load and bringing the intensity, backing off on the intensity and bring the volume up, there is a progression of over time, the intensity getting more and more and more. I'm just giving your body a break to back off that. So what we're trying to do in those moments, in those phases, and for example, like the example I gave you with George earlier on, where we're slowly taking him up. So in that week 5 and 6 is his highest intensity weeks. She's having 2-week stints, and then after that last 2 weeks, we're going back. So at the moment, he's doing a 10, 8, and a 6. Well, now he's going back to the 10. He's doing the 8, but we're setting his reps up in a different way, where we're going to wave him a little bit more. So he's doing some top and back offsets in between certain things. So we're bringing the intensity up again, and then he's going to finish on even lower reps than 6, right? So there's a few things that and I would do that over specific phases for some people. So for some people, it might be in a 6-week block, I'm going to repeat the 6-week block. For some people, it might be 4-week blocks that we do that in, right? It depends on the person. But what you'll see is what we're trying to do is teach that brain to fire the electrical signal down to the motor units of the muscle to keep it boom, boom. So the analogy I've used previously is when you're a beginner, everybody's familiar with going to a sports stadium and watching maybe a sporting event or something like that, where say it's a baseball stadium and it's light when you get there, but obviously the light's going down and they put the floodlights on. How long do they take to come on? It's like a you see the flicker of the light and it just goes. Takes quite a while for them to reach full beam. Imagine that's like the electrical impulse from the brain to the motor unit. If you're a beginner, the impulse is quite. It takes time to drive that the full brightness of the action you want. Whereas when you get really good and the brain is very efficient at lifting heavier loads, it's like a flashlight, like. The electrical impulse just goes, woof, woof. And you can, and if you can repeat that over and over and over, you're just getting quality, high intensity, high threshold motor units, high fast twitch muscle fibers being recruited. So the goal is to lift heavy over time for sure. But we do need that brain to have the ability to back off on that load as well. So we want to be backing off, taking it up, backing it off, taking it up. Does that make sense? So that's where we can really take advantage of that and then increase volume, increase intensity through that intermediate stage, right? And we'll always go back to that at certain points, but once you reach the advanced stuff, 4 years plus, 10 years plus, it might be you're only doing two hard working sets per exercise because now you've acquired the amount of strength that you need. You're lifting very, very heavy weight. So if you're doing five sets per exercise of everything with that load, like that's going to take a toll on your nervous system. That's going to take a toll on your recovery. So you'll see now we go, the frequency now goes up a little bit again, the volume comes down, and the intensity drives up higher because you can handle those loads. And it's not to say that you won't hit the volume, but you just might have volume phases that just have less duration because now you don't want to lose the strength gains that you've had over all of the 10, 15 years of training that you've just done, right? So this is where that's why I'll really focus on the exercise continuum and the training experience that you've got, because that's going to play a big part in how you program, right? So if you gain all that strength, all of a sudden you're doing very light weights, you're going to lose that strength pretty quick because you're not your body needs that novel stimulus to keep the progression going up and up and up. And again, we can drive different exercise selection to drive that as well. We can drive different distances and we can always go back to structural balance phases to make sure the limiters are back in place. So if you look at like a 12-week block that I'll be finishing with George shortly, after that 12-week block, I'm going to be looking at certain limiters that are in his lifts now. It's like, do we need to spend more focus time on his shoulder structural balance? Do we need to look at where his limits are breaking down in his front squat? Right. So we'll notice on his front squat initially, it might just been skill acquisition. But now over time, as is because he's got a great set of pins on him, his legs are strong, right? But now relative to his upper body, I might need to spend a little bit more time on his upper back. I might need to spend some more time on his lower back and his core. Because in a front squat, what you'll typically find is if that core is weak, you might get a little bit of rounding from the upper back. If the rhomboids can't hold you up, you'll get that rounding from the upper back as well. So those two things, I might start hitting the upper back way more frequently through the week in different days and adding a little bit more stimulus to there and the core musculature itself, because they might be limiters for the front squats, right? In the volume phases, I might really start to attack that with a little bit more volume. And then when we go back to the intensity phases, that should then move into the front squat and help his front squats drive up strength a little bit more. Does that make sense? So we're always looking at those at the end of a 12-week block. What went well? Okay, perfect. Those numbers went up. Now, what are your limiters? What do we need to work on next to keep that progression moving over and over every training cycle, every year? And we're looking at progressing over that time. Right. So, Paul, you mentioned you were working on the big three, the bench, deadlift, and the squat. Are you finding any limiters that like positional limiters? Are you finding any? Sorry, who's coaching you right now? Is there a coach you're working with? Because they'll probably have all of this covered, but
Coach Andrew.
Andrew, yeah. Oh, Andrew will definitely have it covered for sure. But if there's like, and this is the type of stuff we discuss on coaching calls as us coaches as well. We'll bring things to the table, say like, I'm doing this with Paul, boom, and we'll all share some thoughts around things like that. So are you coming up with any sort of limitations, like positional strength? Is there any muscular imbalances that you're finding in the in certain lifts?
If it would count the back squat, it's just going down far enough to actually make it a full rep for the heavier weights at least.
Okay, so you're finding the more weights that you put on the bar, you're finding it harder to get down into the range.
Yeah, I'll do like a few reps with just the barbell itself to get the
Yep.
feeling legs of how far I'd have to go down. And again, not do about that for the heaviest weight and doesn't always get as far as it needs to.
Yeah, okay. So that's obviously going to be a positional strength thing, right? So that's where we'll bring this up on obviously our coach meetings and stuff as well. But if you're looking at that, it's like, well, let's say your knees are going to travel forward over your toes. It could be that. It could be a few things around the hips, maybe, or even the core for sure. But let's, for argument's sake now, just for an example, say, well, if the knees can't travel forward enough more now, and they could with a lighter weight, it might be that you need to spend time with your knees more over your toes with a lighter load. Spend time there, spend pauses, add quarter reps there, build tissue tolerance around that position, right? Getting into those positions first, allow the nervous system to really sense that and send proprioceptive messages, send the electrical impulse down to the muscle fibers in those positions so you can recruit out of that position. And like Chris Clark will be a testament to this one. He's just using the bar, right? And his quads are like, they're blowing. Like they're absolutely, like they're working hard. So it's not load that is going to be key here, is torque at that point. It's like the torque, the distance further away from the center of mass, the further that distance away, that muscle has to do more. So with the bar behind his back, the mass now is the barbell right under his low back, right under his ass. And his knees are like his heels are elevated up like 6 inches. So his knees have traveled way past his toes. So that knee joint is the furthest thing away from that weight. So this is the thing that's going to do the most. And he doesn't need 100 kilos on the barbell. All it is like it's 45 pounds. And he's like six reps is kicking his ass, right? So it might be that taking now exercise selection becomes the drill, because now you've got no low back. Like the barbell keeps you in that position. So it's like doing a machine hack squat, but in a different position. But you're having to overcome internal stability still at the same time, because the hack squat takes out the low back, takes out the core musculature to a certain degree, because you're stable, you're externally stabilized. It's pushing up against your back, you're safe. Whereas if you've got the barbell behind you, your core still has to control the spine. Everything still has to stabilize internally. You have to really pull from the hip flexors to pull you in position. Makes sense? So that's where like exercise selection can become key, because if we're going to move that into a back squat, you still have to control that weight around your split. You're still like a movement you have to internally stabilize as you move instead of externally stabilize, right? Chris, give us some insights into the barbell hack squat, mate. How are you feeling on that one?
It's kicking my ass right now, so
Yeah.
it's very humbling.
Humbling. Like to be fair, man, you've picked up the technique pretty quick, to be fair. And the one thing obviously we added, like he tried to do off the plates in the gym, but I sent him through a link to these like wedges that I bought for me to take to commercial gyms, because there was one that I was going to that just had no squat wedges at all. So I bought these for, I think George has them as well, but they're great. Like you can stack them up three heel lifts high, and you can change the ranges that you work through. She's got some of those, and it just increases stability from the foot down, from the foot up. But straight away, you could see the difference. He's able to stay really, really upright now without bailing forward, because the tipping point you're going to have on the barbell hack squat, you're going to bail forward, because those knees, like if they've never been there, the tendency is to want to kick the knees back, tip forward, and use your ass and your low back. But if you can keep that, really put your mind into the, like, be intentful about the execution, and just make those quads work. The worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to drop the barbell on the floor and you ain't going to stand up. You won't hurt yourself unless you really try and cheat it. That's when you will probably hurt yourself, you know. Yeah, Chris has done super well with it. And then the progressive overload comes really differently because now all we've got to do is spend time in that bottom position with the same weight. So I might give him a rep target of 5 to 8 reps. I think it's a 6 to 10. It's 6 to 10 right now, isn't it?
Ten, eight,
So,
six, yeah.
yeah. So he's doing like 6 reps. I'm like, okay, well, let's take it up a rep every week. Doesn't have to be a rep every set, rep every week. Like really slow, like take it slow, because you're going to see progression really well. So you're going to add reps instead of load. But I could also go, well, at the moment you got a 1 second pause. So keep the same load, keep the same reps. Every 2 weeks, we're going to add a second in the bottom position. Don't move. Like one, two. It's not like one, two. It's one, two. Like that's a long time, right? So we'll build that two, and we'll take it to four. Or am I building up at 2 seconds and he's really good at it? He's getting 6 reps. Okay, we're going to do eight. We get him to eight. Perfect. Keep that 2 seconds. We're going to go to 10. Now we're going to go to 4 seconds. We'll drop back down to six. Right, so we're looking at time in that position. Does that make sense? So all I'll look at then is time and attention, but we can do the same thing with total tonnage as well. So for an example, did I help you with the position before I move on with that? Did I help you with the positional stuff, Paul? Like just to give you an idea of, well, if range of motion is the issue, it might be a positional strength thing and a tissue tolerance thing in that end range,
Yeah, well,
right?
thank you.
And to be honest, man, that's going to be something that will always be something you have to work on the stronger you get, right? It's going to happen, right? Because remember, the stronger you get at a specific lift, let's say it's a back squat. Well, a back squat has less knee forward translation than a front squat, right? So if I push my back squat, my front squat, I need to be more upright. My knees need to travel forward more. So I'm working more of that. Knees go over the toes for sure, but not as much as a front squat. So now if I go back to the front squat and you start to load it up at a probable percentage that you might want to lift at, all of a sudden you might notice that your body just doesn't want to go there because it's a load it's never experienced in that end range of the knee flexion. So it might be you tailor back and start putting stuff like that end range position in. As you're doing your back squat stuff, you're still spending time in that end range there, right? So this is where we can piece parts of the puzzle together, right? But in terms of like progressive overload, that's when you can start to look at that in your intermediate phase, your advanced stages of training as well. And now you can really take that up. So an example I was going to give you of a client this recent past week, we've got he might actually be listening to this as well. But the rep range he's using is a 5-5-7-7-9-9. So it's a double exposure to two reps, but he uses the same load for both reps. So if he does, for example, on his hack squat, he was doing 300 pounds for two sets of five. Then he dropped back the load to 270 for two sets of seven. And then the goal was to hit, I think it was 240 or 230. For nines. But as he was going through, he was hit his fives, no problem. He backed off. He hit a seven and the second set of 70 at five, in case you didn't meet the reps. Then he backed off again and he couldn't hit the load. And I told him to back off way more than I thought he needed to. So I think I had him at like, I want to say 220. It was a big bit, it's like 50 pounds back off. And he hit a seven and a five on his nines. So what does that tell me? I look at that and I say, well, what is his body telling me? He can't output. He needs more output work. Like he needs conditioning for that specific lift. So he needs higher rep exposure at that point. And where did the breakdown occur? When I backed down on the sevens. So I didn't go to taking the nines straight away. I took in the sevens. But what I had to do, I had to look at the total tonnage that he was able to give me out of all of those six sets, because now I want to build tolerance of the tissue. So I need a little bit more tonnage and volume to go through that muscle. Does that make sense? So I looked at the average amount of tonnage that he gave me over six sets, and we worked it out. So I gave him seven reps, and then I worked out the average weight per set. And we started him at 240 pounds for seven reps for six sets. And he was able to hit all six sets for seven at 240 pounds, which put him at a total tonnage higher than what he did the previous week. So that's way more work volume and output for that muscle. So what it gave me was the first three sets or so, he was working probably about a 2 RIR, a rep in reserve RIR. So it was enough to give good stimulation for hypertrophy and strength. But the last three sets were on the money. Like he had to work to get those seven. So all we're going to do now is go up a nice little notch. Nothing crazy. He's going to go 250. That's it. 250. So he might start now with the 250, see where we go. Or he might start at 240 for the first three sets and then might go up to 250 for the last three, depending on how he does. If he's, I might even change that around and go 250 for the first three and then 245 for the last three, depending on what I need. Because if I need more output, I want him to get the volume in. So it depends where his drop-off is going to come. Does that make sense? So the total goal there for output, bang, is going to be total tonnage so I can get way more work volume into that leg. Now, over time, I'll keep him there for a few weeks. Then we'll start transcending him into a different phase. Any questions on that, guys? Because I'll give you another example now on a front squat. So, okay, so there's another client that it was a little bit more, this is in kilos and not pounds. But this was a 333, 222, very, very high intensity. It's like a 94% average. So it's very high intensity, but it was 105 kilos for the first three sets of three. So 333 at 105. And then the last three sets of twos was 110 kilos. It was a 5 kilo jump, right? So that was week, I think, two. Week three was a little bit of a deload, so an unloading phase, so a volume. And then we did a 3-3-2-2, but it was to start peaking and seeing how well, because we had less sets, we could drive the intensity up, right? So intensity goes up, volume comes down, right? So that's what we're looking at in that week, just to see how much we could push, and then we can start to work out what type of volume we're going to utilize. So the first three, we did 105. Then we did 107.5. Then we did 110 for two. So 3-3, two. And we were going to go for 115 for two, hit one. So again, worked out the total tonnage. That's what it was. We worked out what the peak was, but I looked at the previous week again, and the average load was 107.5. For the whole, like 105 for three sets of three, 110 for three sets of two. So that average load is 107.5. The total rep count was 15, and the total tonnage was 1,605 kilos. So the goal now was to beat what just hit one more rep in that previous week for total. So you have 107.5 on the bar for eight sets of two, which gave him at 16 reps. Which brings it to 1,760 kilos, I think, something like that. So just adding one rep than the previous one, we just had to look at what could we tolerate. Because if I tried to do 3-3-3-2-2-2, there's going to come a point for work output where that's going to drop, and I'm not going to hit as much tonnage because the intensity is going up and up and up. So I knew my peaking point for one rep was going to be 115 from the previous week. So if I go from 110 to 112 on his twos, he might be able to keep up that for the first two, maybe hit one for the second two, and then bang, he's going to drop. Because now we're looking at consistently repeating it over and over and over. So that might be a strategy we use after we've done another couple of weeks at 107 or 110 now for eight sets of two. Because I know we can do three sets of two. And I've given him more work capacity of 107.5 for eight sets of two now. So I've worked the output. And now we're going to work 110. Can we do now eight sets of two at 110? Because if we can, now we'll start to take up and peak and go back to the 3-3-3-2-2-2, depending on how long we've been there and how jacked up his nervous system is. But does that make sense? But that's more of an advanced thing where we really know numbers. when you're still working skill, those numbers are just going to be all over the place, right? We need to be making sure the positional strength is there. And then we always touch positional structural balance strength intermittently after every block for the first couple of weeks to make sure everything's tidied up. And then bang, we go again. So by the time you want to hit those peaks, you don't want structural balance to be an issue because we don't want injuries to occur, right? So in terms of like looking at that long-term thing of muscle and strength, remember, beginners, 0 to 1 year, you want to be working skill, you want to be working positional strength. As you transcend into an intermediate stage lifting, you can then look at like an undulating approach, focusing on hypertrophy, a block, a strength block, a hypertrophy block, a strength block, and undulating those two things over and over and over. But once you start getting advanced, you can still do that. But now you have to look at if you are doing a full-on hypertrophy block, there might be ways you have to waive that intensity and you have to bring more load on the bar, less sets, all out working sets. And there's ways you can like spread that work intensity across all the sets you need to do. So that's something to think about when you're working on like looking at how long you're going to be training for, right? So I know John does like CrossFit, right? You still have to look at those things with CrossFit as well, because some of your limiters are going to be strength at some point. So stronger you get, you bring your 1 RM up, essentially your 12 to 15 RM goes up by default, right? You're stronger. Like it's easier to lift that weight at the same weight. You're gonna lift more repetitions, right? So you're gonna need to drive strength at some point. Strength is the mother of all qualities. Strength will drive more endurance. Strength will drive more hypertrophy. Strength drive more strength. So this strength is the one thing you always want to drive. Guys, have you got any questions for me on any of the stuff right now, or give me some insights into where you're at and if there's any things you're struggling with right now with strength or muscle?
I'm, like you said, the time in the program. So I'm within the first 6 months. So I'm still working on range of motion and functional strength, working with Coach Chris. So
Nice, man.
the primary goal has been weight loss. Now I'm down to pretty close to where I need to be. And I've got some nagging injuries that I've got to get addressed in the shoulder. And I've had two hip replacements already years ago. So that does affect some of my range of motion stuff. So I
Yep.
was glad you talked about the central nervous system, because that's one of the aspects I've been trying to work on, is just more muscle recruitment. And I've done 30 years of construction, so there's lots of strength, but there's lots of injuries throughout the body too, because of the ergonomics from the time.
Yep,
So
100%. To be honest, man, you got one of the best coaches to help you with that type of stuff as well, man. He's absolutely phenomenal. So Chris is great. In terms of strength development as well, he's one of the best coaches you'll have for that. Like especially for things like powerlifting and developing strength overall as an athlete, he's going to be phenomenal for you.
cool.
But in terms of motor unit recruitment and muscle fiber recruitment, this is why like making sure that structural balance thing is in there as well. So for example, one of the things that actually downregulates that is pain. So if you're actually moving into an exercise and it's giving you a bit of grief, and you're trying to fight through it, you need to find a different position that takes that pain out. Because pain, the sensation of pain, will downregulate how many motor units you start to recruit. So this is where Chris will start to change exercises for you. So this is where it's super important to send him videos, give him as much feedback as possible, at least to say, Chris, if this is an example, right? But Chris, this exercise is giving my hip grief. Or this, I'm getting shoulder pain at this angle, and this is where we look at exercises and videos, and we'll watch you move, let's say on the bench press. And if you've got shoulder pain and you're coming through, we'll look at how, like, what are your elbows doing? What's your shoulder doing at that point? So it'll give us some good indication of one, what is the limiting factor at that shoulder? Is it your rear delts? Is it external rotators? Is it a stability issue? Like all of those things we take a look at. We change the exercise, and then we'll put things in place to start strengthening that limiting factor, so we can then eventually go back to the exercise again, and boom, you're solid and the pain's gone. That's the whole point of it, right? So now with the pain gone, boom, you got more motor unit recruitment straight away.
Okay, that's a good insight about the pain, because sometimes you figure you just got to kind of work through the pain, and that the strength will work it away. I didn't make the connection that the pain is going to negate the central nervous system recruitment.
Yeah, depends what the pain is as well, right? So if it, especially if it's something like a joint pain and an aggravating pain like that, like that it shouldn't be there. If it's joint pain, like we want to make sure the joints are healthy and safety and safe. But if it's a muscular pain from the burning sensation of lactate and you're taking a set where you want to take it, that is going to be one of the limiting factors towards the end. So one thing we always, like some of my clients on this call, I've asked them to tell me, like, well, what stopped that set? Was it pain of the muscle? Like you couldn't tolerate the pain, right? So sometimes we just say you got to breathe and close your eyes, smile at it, suck it up, and we go to work. Because pain, like pain for a muscle, can be trained. That's one thing that we can train, pain tolerance. So over time, and I was speaking to one of the lead hypertrophy researchers on this, because he was telling us about like pain sensation in the brain can be a limiting factor for motor recruitment. And the first question I asked was, can you train that? Is that a trainable process? He was like, yeah, you can do it. And obviously the only way you're going to do it is by training through that pain of when that muscle kicks in and it's taking you to a place where you don't want to go. It's smiling and going, right, this is where the set starts and I gotta go on. Like you just go do another rep. Do another rep. I made Thompson give me a 20 rep set on a leg extension in Costa Rica. I was like, okay, let's go to work. You know, we had to grind through it. But if it's a joint thing, yeah, we want to change exercise. We want to make sure that we're doing the exercise to full safety first, no pain, and then we build range as we go. Because obviously, what's going to happen is if there's a pain there, the body isn't going to allow you to go to that range. So like Paul's just saying, like he can't, as he puts load on the bar, heavier and heavier, he doesn't go down into a full range of squat because the body's like this. There's safety, there's protective mechanisms there to prevent injury, ideally. Sometimes we can like psychologically override that and people like suck it up, buttercup, let's go to work and boom, you get injury, right? But there are safety mechanisms in your body to prevent that type of thing. And Paul might be going through one of those things right now in terms of the back squat. But all that means is if he's trying to access a range, well, I can change exercise selection, I can change load, and I can change what I do in that position to one, make it safe, but two, add more tension to the muscle to make it stronger and more resilient in that position. So when he goes back to the back squat, boom, we just opened up that range for him. So those things in the muscle, obviously you've got the brain sending signals down to the motor unit, but there's proprioceptors in the muscle. A couple which we'll highlight today is muscle spindles and Golgi tendon organs. So there's tendon in the tendons themselves, they're proprioceptors. And these things sense tension in the muscle, length of the muscle, and so on. And if they haven't experienced that tension in that range with that load, it's going to limit their safety protective mechanisms. And there are ways we can override that as well. So things like eccentric training, length and positions, spending time in those end ranges, like things like that, we can start to overload them and really like desensitize them a little bit. Like heavy loads in partial ranges can do that as well. So these are a little bit more intermediate to advanced training methods that we could use. But first off, make sure you've got good range of motion you can control. Only use the range you can really control well with perfect form. Build time, build tolerance there. Then we access a new range. And over time, it will give. Sometimes it just, especially if there's a big injury being there, just might take a little bit more time than we would like. But if you're making progress, you're making progress. That's the main thing.
Okay, thanks.
Good man. Just keep working at it. Keep us posted on there, bro.
Okay.
Good work, man. Anybody else? Thompson, you good?
Yeah, just playing with the that edge, right at the end of the set, especially the top set. How do you go for the weight, or do you go for that, tempo, right? Precise tempo. So when you don't push the weight and you nail the tempo, then you feel like you've left something
What's the goal? What's the goal of the
on the
exercise?
table. Sorry?
What's the goal of the exercise first? That's the first question. Right. So if it's a form and execution thing, I'd leave a rep and reserve on quality. If it's a leg extension or a leg press or a hack squat machine, I'm like, let's go. Because I know you're going to be like 9 times out of 10, you're going to be safe. Right. And the worst thing that's going to happen, like Clarky's known this one, especially on the leg press and things like the hack squat and things like that. The worst thing that's going to happen, especially on the leg press or a pendulum squat, going to sit on the floor and you're just going to get back up. The machine is like, it can't hurt you because the safety stops on there. So the only thing that's going to happen is if you try and force the rep by compensating through something else. This is where I love the opening win that you had this week, Thompson, was you've gone back to being more focused and intentful in every rep. Because it's in those last few reps that the body panics and the body just tries to get out of it, right? So that's why we say, what stopped the set? Was it fear? Was it the pain of the muscle? Was it compensation? You have to be aware of those things. When those sets get really serious on those last few reps, take your time, like really be mindful about what's going on. Lock it in. Like think of those 2 to 3 different cues that you need to focus on over and over and over to know that exercise is going to be safe. That's one thing we always say to you in like Costa Rica and like when we're in Marbella is like, you're safe. I got you. Like all I was reinforcing was drive the low back into the pad. Feet through the floor, bang those two things over and over because those are the things that are going to keep you safest. And I was obviously supporting you if you needed it, but you have way more confidence. How many more reps did you do?
Like we just kept going.
Night and day, man. Like I know it's in there. 9 times of 10 is safety. Like you feel like you're scared of failing at that point. The worst thing that's going to happen is you're not going to be able to stand up, and the machine is going to stay there, and you're okay. You just sit on your, you crawl out on your ass a little bit, like, damn, I missed a rep, but you probably did double the amount of reps you thought you were going to do. There you go.
One thing I didn't tell you on our catch ups actually recently, before I was like, move my old shoulder injury, I was doing the kind of like the more protected kind of shoulder kind of raises. Recently, I've just been doing the normal one.
Yep. Shoulder's fine, right? So that's where that goes back to the structural balance stuff, right? So this is what I was saying to you earlier about boys, like the feedback in the videos and the feedback communication is key. Because Thompson's great at giving feedback. And he's like, this shoulder just niggles. It just feels so unstable, like going into flies, going into anything overhead press. So we changed the exercise selection around. We brought him more in front here. So we didn't keep him there where he's more externally rotated. But we brought him back to a position that he felt really good at. There was no pain. But then we put in things to really solidify the shoulder joint in the lengthen range and the short range position. So we doubled up on a little superset that I've used with athletes in the past, where he's lying on the floor, he's lying on a bench, he's doing something called a power raise, where work the load as your arm comes across, the dumbbell comes up, and now it's loaded here, so it's more in the lengthen position. So he does his reps there, specific tempos to keep him in specific ways. And then he's lying face down on the floor. I think Chris might have had this one as well, where he's laid on the floor. Now the position, he's laying face. So imagine my arms directly on the floor, and all you've got to do is raise, boom, come back up and down. So it's a very short position, but you're working that shortened range. So remember, if I get you good in the short range and the lengthened range, that's keeping you nice and safe. That's getting you strong in those positions where really weak. And all of a sudden, no pain.
Doing those with a 2.5 kilo plate on the floor is like it didn't feel like much for weeks, but it actually has helped with the heavy kind of
100%. Like I've
shoulder
taken
press.
athletes in the past where like I've looked at their structural balance a little bit. I use ratios now and again for some people, but like looking at somebody that has a very high bench press and a very weak external rotator cuff, like sometimes that's something you're gonna need. It's depending on the type of bench press, by the way. It's not just every bench press, but a specific bench press, like with the width of the grip. Because I say you're wide on the bench press, you don't need as much external rotation if you're on a wide grip. So if you're on like a, so Paul, if you're doing like a powerlifting, more wider grip bench press, for example, there's less range of motion going on, so you don't need as much internal or external rotation going at the on the upper arm. So I don't really need to look at, you could do a little bit, but not as much external rotation work, whereas you might really look at rear delts, right? Because your rear delts now have to stabilize you in this position and boom, boom, boom. Make sense? Whereas somebody which is more narrow, like an athlete that needs their arm in this 45 degree angle, which is probably the strongest position for the shoulder joint there or the safest. As you come through now, there's a little bit more range that you can actually internally and externally rotate your humerus or the upper arm. So it might be that I start to look at, well, how much external rotation strength do you have? Because that's going to keep me nice and solid and ex and stable in external rotation. I can really drive and output. So things like that I've used in the past with athletes that I've trained, like getting that ratio to about 10% of your bench press can work wonders. And I've only seen a couple of people that have been really close to that 10%. So we have had like big dude, like rugby players I used to coach. They're using like 3 kilo dumbbells just trying to do external rotations and they can bench like 150. It's wild, right? So they should be doing like anywhere from 10 to 15 kilo dumbbell external rotations and they're miles off it, right? So we bring that up, and all of a sudden, their shoulder pain drops off. Their bench press starts to go up a little bit more, less pain on the bench press. Other factors in that, other exercise in that as well. But again, it all comes back to what is the limiter here? What is the biggest bang for buck, and how we're going to sequence that in? What are we going to put in, and then what are we going to take away? Does that make sense? And that's pretty, like, in a nutshell, that's the longevity of training. We're always looking at what is our next limiter that we're going to put in to make us progress further and further and further, right? Clarkie's doing it right now. Thompson's doing it right now. Paul's doing it. Everybody's doing it. Matt's good to have you on, brother. Everybody's doing their program. But it's all part of a big picture to keep us strong, muscular, and fit as we go through our journey in the iron weight room, let's say. Sometimes you're going to need to put a little bit more emphasis on aerobic work. Sometimes a little bit more on high intensity interval work because the energy systems get out of whack. You put it like, imagine this, right? You put on so much muscle mass, you go back to doing cardio work, and all of a sudden you're like, holy shit, like I can't keep up. Well, now your body has to move around a little bit more muscle than it used to before. So now you've got to condition that muscle to do different things. You've got to condition the heart to do different things. So that limiter now becomes your aerobic and anaerobic fitness. So the weight training might have to take a little bit of a drop, and then boom, you've got to put more emphasis on the cardio work. So this is why it's always important to track that data, boys. See George sweating it out there. Good man. Love it, brother. Boys, anything else that we can support you with today? Hope that was a interesting insight into the longevity of training and looking at optimal ways to maximize strength and muscle, but not just adding load every time in the bar, because at different stages of your training career, you're going to have to do different things that isn't just weight on the bar, weight on the bar, weight on the bar, because it just isn't going to be linear, right? So I hope that gives you a nice little insight into the thought process around it. Maybe you've sort of thought about, okay, well, this is what I'm doing right now. This is why. Now you could probably th logically think about your next steps as well. Good. Well, boys, thank you much so much for your time today. Appreciate you being on. Thompson, you get yourself to bed, brother. Have a nice sleep. George, kick some ass, man. I'll look forward to an update in the morning when I wake up.
Thanks, Gav.
Nice one, boys. Chris, good to see you, man. PJ, is it PJ? Good to see you, brother. Keep us posted. Keep us updated on your hip and your shoulder, man, okay? Chris,
Gav.
thanks, brother. Good to see you. Take care, John. Enjoy your walk, man.